Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Raley here, and over there is Brother Rufus, Rufus Hedmiston, former Secretary of State and Attorney General, and also the current Secretary General of Gardening, the former Deputy Chief Counsel in the Senate Watergate Committee, and all of that thrown into one. I don't know what your title would be with all of that.
But, well, let's say... The boy from Boone.
Boy from Boone, yeah. So I guess Governor Hunt really started calling you the Secretary General. So
He introduced me one, said, I'm going to introduce you to Greenville one night, and he said, what shall I call you, either General or Secretary? And I said, well, how about Secretary General? I want to be like that guy at the UN, Boutros.
No,
golly,
you can,
golly,
that,
golly.
That would require you being the General Secretary.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know what the difference. Who is the General Secretary? There's some positions in government overseas.
Well, that's United Nations.
Is that overseas?
Secretary General is United.
Secretary General is the United Nations, but General Secretary is I don't know where I have, but there are General Secretaries.
Well, just make it up, Mike.
Well, there are general secretaries. I'm going to find out here. But at any rate, you're here and have been on the show for 20 years.
That's hard to believe.
I know. I'm positive. I don't remember exactly the date that you came, but I'm positive that you appeared. Now, you were on just once in a great while in 05 and 06.
Early years.
And then 07. And then... I guess you started enjoying the show, or people were saying they were hearing you, and that's always nice to hear.
It is.
So,
and we've got.
I'm bowled over by our listenership on this program,
too.
and you know, 80 years of gardening program that it been successful. I wouldn't call it odd.
Well, our listenership, too, amazes me at the different – they come from different strata of life. Good working folks, people that garden, people that don't garden.
Yeah.
Folks tell me, like they do you, that they can't grow a weed, but they love to hear us batter. Batter we will do.
Is that banter or batter?
Well, either one.
Well, I haven't made a cake in – at least a year, so I haven't dealt with batter. But we could, and occasionally this does turn into an Ask Your Neighbor, so. But I don't know that Bart and Charlie Gaddy and Mario Dell, I know I didn't, because I was the last one to do the show. I ran it into the ground. But I don't know that they ever really had a real cooking segment. They took recipes and gave helpful hints. As a matter of fact, I have maybe next time we're at the farmer's market, I'm going to give away, or maybe we'll make something big out of this. I have at least one copy that I'm willing to part with of Bart Rittner's Helpful Hints book that was compiled during the run of Ask Your Neighbor, during his run. Now, he did a couple of cookbooks. And he also did this, this book. And I don't know if you've ever seen it or not.
No, I haven't.
But it's full of helpful hints. And I'm sure they still work.
No, so. I did not know that Bart was a cook. We talked about that.
He was a great cook.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, so are you.
I have a limited repertoire, but I cook fairly well, some things.
Well, you know, my specialty is potatoes au gratin. And one time I got messed up and said, well, I'm really good at making potatoes au rotten. I haven't done that in a while. I think I'll do that this weekend.
That involves potato, really thinly cut potatoes and flour and what else?
You've got cheese
in
there.
Got cheese. It's a creamed.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
really good.
It's not a saute.
If you do it right, but you're right about thinly
Melissa
cut.
Melissa makes that, but she hadn't made it in a long time.
Yeah. Potatoes au gratin or rotten.
Yeah. That's what you, I mean, that's your specialty?
Well, that's one of them. And then, of course, I pride myself on doing roast corn just right. And the only way you can get it just right is on a grill.
Yeah.
Now, it's good boiled, but I've never gotten exactly how long to do it. Maybe somebody will tell us today. But I've told about get the water to a boil. Let it boil for maybe a minute or two, and then just cut it off. That's what people tell me, but I don't ever seem to do it exactly right.
I can remember my vivid memory of the best roast corn I ever had was at Carl and Ruby Cooper's cabin out. Carl Cooper owned the pool room. His brother, Frederick, was the bank president, People's Bank president.
Yeah.
And they were all wonderful people and made plenty of money. And Carl had
a cabin. Well, he should if he's a banker.
Yeah, and then Carl had the pool room. Well, we were out at Carl's cabin, my mother and father and me, and they were having a party. There were a lot of people out there, and I remember eating roasted corn with before it was shucked and everything. That's the way you can't shuck corn and
roast it. No, you will leave the shuck on.
Yeah, and I suppose I don't remember if it was wrapped in anything. I know people wrap it in. And aluminum foil, but I don't think this was.
Not just leave it in the husk.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I guess the women talked, and the men went in and played poker.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure there were some cocktails here and there. All right, Patrick McMillan is going to join us here in a moment. We're going to take a break. And be back, and we're going to talk to Margaret, and we're going to have Patrick with us, and all of it. Yeah, on the WPTF Weekend Gardener, it's 8:15. We're back on WPTF. Mike Crayley here, along with Rufus Edmonston, and a special guest. We're so glad to have Patrick McMillan with us today. Professor, shall I call you Professor?
You can just call me Patrick.
All right. Former professor at Clemson University. Where else did you teach?
Just at Clemson. I was at Clemson for 20 years. Yeah. And
there's your son who's out west, who's in Nebraska.
He is. Yeah. He's a professor out at the University of Nebraska.
Yeah.
They, as much as he fought it, he followed in his dad's footsteps, and he's a plant guy.
Well, we are all kind of plant people here, and it's so great to have you. And we all kind of relate stories, and I was thinking about a couple of things. My old program director used to say, talk about things you've seen on the way to work or walking in the neighborhood, and I've always kept that in mind, and I do for this show. The fragrant osmanthus
has
just knocked me out this week. Rufus, you've got several large ones, I'm sure.
I have a hedge, Patrick, that's at least 40 feet tall.
Whoa.
Oh, it's incredible.
Wow.
And they're the yellow ones.
Aronteacus, yeah, that's a beautiful.
That's what I have, and I had to take down a maple tree, and so it wasn't getting as much of the sunlight as it should. Now it's getting almost full sun, so it's just going crazy.
I was up early this morning walking around, and the whole 2.5 acres is just peppered with this wonderful, lovely scent. Somebody ought to make a perfume or a...
There may be one. I don't know. There is for magnolia.
There may well be. Yeah, I don't know if there is, but that that yellow flowered variety, those 40 feet tall, you might have had some of the first ones planted around here. Then those are that sounds like that's pretty good.
Mine are about 45 years old.
45 years old. Yeah,
and it serves as a hedge to hide my car beside the garage.
There you go.
And I had enough sense to space them right when I planted them. Most people don't.
Yeah.
Like they plant
too close.
Too close. And I went through that spell of when people planted those horrible, what do you call them?
Arbivai?
Well, it wasn't that one. It was that other horrible one.
Leland cypress.
Yeah.
Planted a whole hedge of those. And still have about 2 left ready to take down.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Ralston, you know, I think, introduced that plant around here. He was very high on it, but...
He must have been high when he introduced it.
I don't know, but it was the answer to a lot of people's dreams, I think, for a while, if they wanted, as we say down in Nash County, a blind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That worked pretty well, but it's
if you wanted 4 or 5 feet a year, you had your plant.
Dadgum right.
Yeah.
And people are still planting them. I don't know how many nurseries are selling them now, but
they're still around. You know, I think people love that evergreen screen that they have, but of course we all know that Leland cypress has a lot of problems as they get up larger.
Yeah.
But, now you're seeing people switch to Green Giant Thuja, the arborvitae hybrid has become kind of the new standard. But isn't it great when people think outside the box and plant something like Osmanthus aurantiacus, beautiful golden flowered Osmanthus that gives that beautiful fragrance in the
Does the white bloom give as much wonderful scent as the yellow?
It does. So the yellow and the white, there's a yellow and white form of what we call Osmanthus fragrans. That's the Osmanthus that does not have the leaves that poke you like a holly. Right? Yeah. And then you've got Heterophylla, which is this species that does poke you like a holly.
But it doesn't. My holly poker doesn't bloom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, is it supposed to?
Yeah, usually later. Like it's a winter through early spring, at least in South Carolina. That's what they were for us. And we've got some down at the park.
This is only varieties. About 4 feet tall, so maybe I'll be patient.
Well, those are the dwarfs, and that's that with the holly leaf forms, there's a lot more dwarf varieties that have been developed over the years that allow a lot more versatility in planting. So you really can put those beautiful scents. And, you know, when I garden, I'm always gardening for not just the way something looks and the appearance that it gives you, but also all your senses. You know, how does it feel? How does it taste? How does it smell? That's so important because those scents go right back to feelings in human beings. You know, we associate those scents with memories.
Well, it made me feel better this morning.
And it makes you feel better.
Oh, right. It does, and especially when you smell it all over the place. A lot of people have planted them. I hope it's because of this show, because we've talked about it so much.
Well, the ginger years. Lily, too. What a wonderful scent. I've walked past that. That patch of very aggressive plant.
It'll grow well.
It can be. Looks like corn stalks, but if you're
and
it just means you can share with people.
That's true, and that's the way that plant has gotten around so often. Unless you go to the farmer's market, you usually don't see it for sale.
Oh, true.
But the ginger lily, Hedychium cornarium, that is one of my favorite plants. I always do plant some of those plants just for scent, but it has great stories because that ginger lily is actually, believe it or not, is I think the national flower of Cuba.
Oh.
Even though it's not from even this hemisphere, it's from Eastern Asia. It's the national flower of Cuba because during the revolution there, when they were fighting for independence, the women would put a flower, and you think about that flower, it's so weird, and that's a whole show in itself that's not quite like the flowers of other plants, but it has a little tube at the end, and they would roll up messages and stick them in the tube and wear one behind their ear and then flirt their way through the Spanish lines to get messages to the resistance. So it,
wow.
Yeah. So it not only does it have great, great odor that we associate just with gardens in the South. I mean, that's what that you associate that plant with. But also,
well,
I
have to say, its cut shelf life is very short.
Very
yeah,
short.
Yeah, yeah. And it smells like honeysuckle to me.
Yeah, it does.
At least the white variety.
About every 2 days, I replenish the vase, not vase.
You don't make a layout of it or something, hang it around your neck.
But Patrick's given me a good idea.
Wear one behind your ear
to walk into work someday.
There you go. I'm sure they would not be
cigar,
surprised.
With a cigar. Cigar.
Yeah. Hey, Marjorie's here. Marjorie.
Marjorie. Yes. Hey.
Marjorie.
How y'all
Marjorie.
Doing?
Okay. Great. How can we help you?
I have called y'all before. I'm from the Central Carolina Chrysanthemum Society.
Yeah.
And you told me way back when, in the spring, when y'all get your plans for the fall together, please give us a call.
So yeah, please do. I mean, you have called, haven't you?
Yeah.
I have, yes.
So give us the information.
Well, we're having a show and an exhibit. It's called Magnificent Mums. This exhibit and nationally judged show is going to take place at the James Martin Building, which is off of Gate 9, Trinity Road, out of the fairground. It will be...
Isn't that ironic, since Rufus went down to Charlotte and for lunch with former Governor Martin this week, I guess.
Yes,
it was.
Yes, what a delightful time I had with our former Governor Margie. He's very, very smart. We had more fun discussing. You know, he whipped me for governor, and I said... Well, we never said an ugly word about one another, and that's the reason I interviewed him was because I'm writing a book on civility, bring back civility, and Governor Martin was the epitome of civility and decency, and I just cherish my interview with him.
Yeah, but continue with the Chrysanthemum
Society.
Yeah,
just pay no mind to me, Marjorie.
No, I just thought it was ironic. It's my fault. Go ahead.
Is so open to having an exhibit like this, and I guess it would be a fitting tribute to politics that you're describing.
Yeah,
for both of y'all.
Oh, great.
Anyway, back on the subject here. Yes, November 8th and 9th, it will be open to the public. Saturday, November 8th, from 1 to 5, and Sunday from 10 until 3. And I want to make sure everybody understands that these are not the chrysanthemums that you buy in the grocery store. For most people who will come to this exhibit and show, and it is free to get in, it will be undoubtedly unlike anything that they've ever seen because these are different in color, size, and shape. They are massive. They are often asymmetrical, multiple colors, and we're going to be fortunate to have so many highly talented growers from other states coming to compete. We have nationally accredited judges from the National Chrysanthemum Society, which is coast to coast. Everything in the competition portion, that's the nationally judged part of the show, is going to be, as I say, rare, and some of these individual cultivars are going to be among the last remaining examples on the planet. We only have a few of them. Our society is trying desperately to save these, but it's a lot for a very limited number of people to do. So most likely this will be the only opportunity for some people to ever see some of these flowers. Also, we are going to have an exhibit, and in the exhibit part, it's not competitively judged, so you're going to see what's possible in arranging these plants purely for pleasure.
Now Margie, hold on. I want to continue this after we check the news, if you don't mind. Would you hold on?
I will, yes,
all right,
sir.
Great. All right, more coming up on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. We'll be right back. We're back on WPTF, The Weekend Gardener. And Margie's with us from the Chrysanthemum Society, but it's not, she says, the same chrysanthemum that we are seeing in the stores and the nurseries and so forth. Please, Marjorie, explain the difference in look and so forth.
We have, in the kind of chrysanthemums that we're talking about, rare and heirloom chrysanthemums, and by heirloom, I mean these are people... There are people out there growing these that actually hand them down from generation to generation, growing them. And occasionally we find some from a long-lost cultivar, even in an old garden somewhere that's long since abandoned. They are oftentimes in some of the classes, there are 13 classes of them, some of them are up to 12 inches across. They are, in some shapes, giant spheres with what you would call petals all pointing upwards. In the realm of these chrysanthemums, that's called an incurve. When they point downwards, it's called a reflex. The balls of spheres are absolutely enclosed in this sort of classification, meaning that you never see that disc or center, like you would in, say, a daisy or maybe in a dahlia. There are also some varieties that are very tiny, up to maybe an inch across. There are some that have massive centers that look like a gigantic eye staring at you. And the center.
Oh, gee, don't say that. That'll be before I go to bed tonight. That's all I'm going to think about is I got a giant eye.
Think of it as a fried egg then, okay?
Okay, fried egg will be good.
sometimes the center is the same color as the petals, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's a contrasting and sort of a matching, sort of a harmonious color. Sometimes the petals are flat, ligulate, like a strap, but some of the time the petals are what we call spatulate. They're little spoons. And inside of the spoon, you can see that the petals are different color than on the outside. Some of them are what most people seem to gravitate toward. They're called spiders. In the grocery store, if you see the mass-produced version of those, they're tiny, and they call them sometimes Fuji mums. But in the National Chrysanthemum Society world, those spiders are enormous, and all of the tips are curved or curled on the petals. We also have some called brushes and thistles, and they are rather small, maybe a couple of inches, but some of them stand up like a brush. Some of them look more windswept, like a thistle, just sort of tussled by the wind. And of course, although they look like they may be stiff, these are all very, those things you call a petal, which we would call a floret, is actually a flower of its own.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. You can get down into the complexity of this, and I'm sure that the good doctor there with you today.
I'm sure, Patrick, you know all about this.
Oh, I think it's wonderful, Margie. I'm excited about this. I can't wait to go.
Yeah,
the flowers on the whole family. You know, chrysanthemum belongs to what we call the aster family or the composite. Yeah. And I love that word, the term composite, because it describes the what we call a flower on these. And so when we look at a chrysanthemum flower, when you look at a daisy flower, when you look at an aster flower, what you're actually looking at are hundreds of flowers, because each little yellow dot in the center is a five-petaled, what we call disc flower. If you look at them up close, and on the outside are, and Margie uses exactly the term I would use, which is ligulate. And it's what we call the flowers on the outside, are ray flowers or ligulate flowers. Ligule It's a tongue. So they.
Okay. Makes sense.
You're getting scarier, Mike.
I know.
Yeah, getting scarier with eyes and tongues. If it moves. Looking at you. But yeah, so, and I love those, the spatulate flowered mums. I remember my grandmother collected mums. She loved mums. And so for me, they're kind of special because they remind me of the pass-alongs that she had collected her whole life in her garden. But those spatulate flowered ones, you can actually tell that each one of those ligules, each one of those ligulate flowers is a one-petaled flower because they roll into a tube as they go back towards the receptacle, the place where all the flowers come together on the head. So, yeah, it's interesting that these are, isn't that cool? Learn something.
It is. It is.
Now,
why are the ones that we always see every year, the ones in the, that form the mum tree at the State Fairgrounds Flower Show, why are they the ones that are only ones that are sold that we see? I mean, I don't know that I notice a lot of others.
We sell ours, but obviously they take us as individuals so long to grow and also to come up with new ones. As you just described, those individual florets are not only individual flowers. The ones that are in the disc in the center are the, we would call the perfect flower because they're both male and female. And if we want to have a chance to try to come up with and hybridize these flowers, new versions of cultivars, then that's what we look at as the perfect. The females are the ones on the outside, the outside florets. But nonetheless, people are trying to come up with these, but as you can imagine, it takes years. So putting them up for sale is not as common as you might think. We sell the seedlings, well, the very small flowers that are in the spring. That's what I called you all about then. When we have a couple of inch high little plant for sale out there at the farmer's market, mm-hmm. I'm sure people look at that and think, yeah, right. Well, right now out in my garden, I have a couple that were sort of oops, and they're probably 6 feet, 7 feet tall. They're going to be way too tall.
Yeah.
Those would be the ones I'll have to deal with on a ladder. That was a mistake.
Well, Marjorie, may I ask, most of these things you have to stake, right?
You must stake them to get them to grow the way that I'm describing. You don't have to. They can wind their way all over the place. But if you want them to get that big around, that tall, that straight stem, to be able to compete nationally, and we have to set up standards so that it's fair. So there are certain shapes, sizes, colors that are the perfect one. That's how this is judged in the nationally judged competition. So, yes, those are staked. They are tended every day at this time of the year. They will grow in a couple of days, a couple of inches.
Right.
So you're out there all of the time trying to make sure that you, if it's that kind of flower, disbud it, for example, meaning that you don't allow any other bud to appear. Drive all the energy toward that one bloom that you're looking for and hope that it comes up November 8th and
9th. Will you have anything for sale on November the 8th?
Yes, we'll have souvenir-type things, everything from the tea towel to the little ones. We have mugs, for example, that are filled with bouquets. These are little ones. We actually have one of our members who has a farm out in Pittsburgh. She had this extra acre, and we started sticking the mother plants in the ground there. Those are the ones that have survived over the winter. We took all the cuttings that we wanted to root them to sell in the spring. And the mothers that were left, we stuck in the ground. Those are going to be relatively untended. They'll be lovely. They won't be as big or have a straight stem. So what we're going to do is grab as many of those as we can and put them in little mugs. And you might see five of these, plus some greenery. We'll sell those.
Okay.
And also, we do have some nationally recognized floral designers that are going to be doing the exhibit part of this. And by that, I mean one of our members was the floral designer for the White House.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another, the British Embassy. these people really do know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well,
it's
obviously you do.
Yeah. Well, Marge, I got a question. When are you going to develop a blue one?
He wants a Carolina blue one, Marjorie, to be specific.
You know, as a state fan, I have to say I love the Reds.
Oh, well, okay. I'm getting nowhere
no problem
here.
There. No problem there. Lots of cooperation. Margie, call us on November 8th, please.
Oh, I will.
Or anytime you want to, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'm going to try to get there.
Me too.
Patrick and I want to get to see that.
All right. Thanks very much, Margie.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up. It's 8:44. All right, we're back on WPTF at 8:47. A retired professor from Clemson University, Patrick McMillan, is with us. And also, we were talking about Washington State. Now, you spent some time out in Washington State at a beautiful garden.
Yes, I did. I did. I was director out at Heronswood Garden, which is a garden that was developed by Dan Hinckley, who's one of the sort of the very, very famous horticulturists and garden designers in the world. And I was privileged to be out there and be director of that garden for almost 2 years. We kind of planned to stay, but something about the Carolinas always draws you back.
I know it does. It does. You describe the weather, and I think I would like it immensely.
Oh, yeah.
And you say they don't have any weeds.
Right. That's the thing. If you're a southern gardener, you know that you just – the weeds
I'm sort of doubting that.
And it's cool all the time, Rufus.
It is.
The man said it.
No, I mean, the amount of time we spent weeding at Heronswood, I mean, if we spent – a concerted day, the whole staff a month, that were just not weeds. Mm-hmm. And it's not like here, because different weeds, different climate, and it doesn't rain in the summer there. People think it rains all the time. It doesn't rain in the summer. So you don't have that wonderful warm combined with wet that we get that, you know, grows crabgrass at 8 inches a minute. And so they don't have most of those weeds. What we spent most of our time pulling out at Heronswood were plants like the false Solomon seals and beautiful wildflowers that we wouldn't even pull out of our garden, but they were growing where they shouldn't grow and moving their way around. So it's a different place and definitely a different experience. But if you ever get to feeling bad when you travel out to the West Coast and you see everybody's garden looks so lush and so perfect, let me tell you, it takes a lot more to garden in the South than it does to garden in the Pacific
absolutely.
Northwest.
It certainly, sure it does.
I asked Patrick a moment ago when we were off air about that beautiful, beautiful yellow, tall, I thought it was a sunflower, and he told me to explain it was a Rudbeckia.
Yeah, Rudbeckia, yeah.
You remember that, Mike? We went
I do,
his
yeah,
place.
Out
of downtown park.
Beautiful background of 10 feet tall, maybe.
Yo, so that's, what's that called?
So it's called giant coneflower or giant black-eyed Susan.
Yeah.
And it's Rudbeckia maxima. It's it's a North American native, and it is everything you want in a really tall, bold perennial for the garden in the South. It's from farther west than here, places like Arkansas, eastern Texas, Oklahoma, that area of the country. But it has these beautiful, we call glaucus, which is bluish green foliage that is really attractive. And it's short, basal leaves, about a foot and a half to 2 feet tall. And then it sends up these really massive, rigid stems that don't flop over.
Oh, man, that is wonderful.
All it needs is heat, sun, and you're done. Grow in virtually any type of soil, from clay to sand. And it looks just as good if it hadn't rained for a month as if it's raining every day.
Well, I'll trade you.
So can we find those around here at nurseries, or have to grow them by seed?
Absolutely. You see them for sale at garden centers around here, and certainly Plant Delights Nursery, where I also worked out there. We sell those frequently, and so you can find them both from local retailers and right. also from online.
Well, what's the kind I've got, Patrick, that falls over? Beautiful. They even, when they fall over, they're so full of blooms. I call it swamp daisy. What is it?
Oh, swamp daisy. maybe swamp sunflower?
Yeah.
That blooms
yeah.
real late in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, oh, talk about an interesting subject. That is actually not swamp sunflower. So in the horticultural trade, swamp sunflower is a native species, right? We find it in North Carolina from the mountains all the way to the coast. And it's about 3 feet tall, and it's a beautiful sunflower that's one of the last things to bloom in the year. A lot of times
right.
they're
mine's
still
blooming now.
Yeah, a lot of times they start in September and they'll bloom all the way to November. But there's another species from the other Carolina, where I was exiled for 20 years from North Carolina.
That's okay.
It's called muck sunflower.
And of course it is.
It's a different species, but it's similar. It doesn't have quite as narrow leaves. And that thing will grow 10, 12, 15 feet
okay.
tall.
I am corrected. That's what I have.
That's
oh,
what you have.
Okay.
So what you have yeah. was probably sold as swamp daisies or swamp sunflower.
Well, somebody gave it to me.
Yeah, but it actually is muck sunflower. And so those are fantastic plants for particularly like butterflies and pollinators love those in the autumn. Really important for migrating things like right. like our monarchs that are coming through in such numbers now, but they're a little too wild for most people's gardens. And the unfortunate thing is that they have been misidentified as our local native, Helianthus angustifolius, which is a much more compact plant, still spreads but not as aggressively. And there's a beautiful cultivar that was just released in the trade this year. Plant Delights Nursery released it. It's one of my selections from South Carolina, from I think we have South Carolina Botanic Garden, where I was director. And it's called Berkeley Gold. And talk about an amazing plant. It's about 3 feet tall, and it is just a mound of yellow color, and particularly late. Like October through even
is
November.
Is that native to Berkeley County or?
Yeah, the original plants came from up along Highway 45 in Berkeley County, South Carolina.
Near Charleston.
North, Monk's Corner area, yeah. One of the, Berkeley County is, I did a lot of work in Berkeley County over the years, and my dear friend and mentor, Richard Porche down at the Citadel, who we wrote the Wildflowers of South
Almost
Carolina
went to school
book.
There.
Yeah, yeah, really, really. Amazing guy. He's colorful. You love him, Rufus.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are a lot of those folks in South Carolina, colorful.
Yeah.
Hey, Jean is with us. Jean, good morning. You're on WPTF.
Hi.
Hey.
This is Jean.
Yes, ma'am. How can we help you?
Good morning, Rufus, particularly, who's helped with William B. Umstead State Park over the years.
Hi, Jean.
Hello, good morning. I'm the chair of the Friends Group for William B. Umstead State Park. And for years, we've promoted native plants. Of course, the state parks is big on native plants.
Yes, ma'am.
And we have two annual plant sales, one in the spring, one in the fall, where we feature only native plants. Our upcoming fall native plant sale is Saturday, October 11th, from noon to 3:00. And if you're a donor at umsteadcoalition.org, then you get hour early. Come in at 11 o'clock if you'd like. Plants that we are featuring are all native. You can see the list at umsteadcoalition.org. Some examples, and the scientific names are there too, but pawpaw, American beautyberry, New Jersey tea, three kinds of azaleas, swamp rose.
You said swamp rose, Jean? What's a swamp rose?
Swamp rose, Rosa palustris. Sorry, I have a master gardener and environmental education person on our website. I'm not as good as they are at pronouncing the names. It is a beautiful flower that's a native, and we are selling that in a 1 gallon container.
Oh, wonderful.
So all of the plants are native, and we have a master gardener and an environmental educator who works over at Prairie Ridge with the Natural Science Museum, and they will be there to help everybody with knowledge of the plants and when to plant them, how to take care of them. So that's exciting, too, that we can offer that opportunity.
Yeah. October 11th, where?
Yes, thank you. So we fell out of William B. Umsted State Park's Reedy Creek entrance, which is the entrance off of Harrison Avenue in Cary.
Right.
So if you take exit 287 on I-40 or just come down Harrison Avenue to the south till it ends, that is a big parking lot at William B. Umsted State Park. The reason it's called the Reedy Creek entrance is there's a creek there called Reedy Creek.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we're right there. You come in park, and we are going to be set up in a lawn area just as you enter the parking lot to the right.
Well, Gene, I want you to, on October 11th, if you will call us on the show and remind us.
If right.
You have time.
Yes, we would love to.
Yeah.
While you're there, we have we're proud of a rain garden we put in the parking lot.
Nice.
Parking lot is an acre of impervious, shooting hot, dirty water into the park, and we have created two large forested rain gardens at the end, where now we have native trees and bushes and flowers, treating the one-acre parking lot. So it's all volunteers, and all of the receipts 100% go to save to protect and serve William B. Umsted State Park. For such
wonderful
things as that rain garden.
And Gene, thank you for all you do for the Umsted National Park.
Absolutely.
I happen to work with Gene, and I know.
Yeah. Gene, we got to go to the news, but thank you so much. October 11th, you call us back.
I will. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Yourself.
Thank you. All right. More of the Weekend Gardener coming up on WPTF.